what a difference 37 minutes makes. So, you know, I write up the description of the show, usually about 7 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time, 2 hours beforehand. And usually not a lot happens between now and then. But when I wrote this up this morning, oil futures were up to $111 a barrel. The stock market was projected to collapse by about another one full percentage point. And of course, there was a 48-hour deadline due to expire today by Donald Trump that unless the Strait of Hormuz was reopened by Iran, he would obliterate all of the civilian power plants in the country, or at least maybe some of them, which is a war crime, by the way. But
yeah, it's a war crime
in the American
quite specifically.
Media, yeah, nobody seems to talk about that.
No.
And anyway, so after that, I guess he got up and didn't like the look of his stock portfolio. And he issued the statement on Truth Social claiming that he had a there have been productive phone calls between the U.S. and Iran, and that he's extending the deadline for blowing up civilian power plants in Iran by 5 days. The market did a radical turnaround. It's currently the Dow Jones Industrial Average is projected to open up by about 600 points in 28 minutes. Oil futures are down. So, I mean, you know, it's everything's bouncing around. Interestingly, John, the Iranians deny all this. This is the second time that Trump has said that there were productive talks. Iran says there's been no talks, productive or otherwise, that they're not interested in talks.
I gotta say why I believe the Iranian side of this story. Mm-hmm. Because Trump very specifically said that these were direct talks. Mm-hmm. Well, it's U.S. policy not to carry out direct talks with the Iranians. That was the whole point of having the Omanis involved, where the U.S. negotiators are in one room, the Iranians are in another room, and the Omani foreign minister is just shuttling from room to room to room to room. We don't do direct talks with the Iranians. And now all of a sudden the president is saying that he's picked up the phone and he's, you know, negotiated this. We don't do that. So
Right? If he wanted to.
This would be a radical change in policy. Of course, he definitely could if he wanted to. But if what he said were true and I were the Iranian leader, I'd say, ha, not only did he back off, but we forced him into direct person-to-person talks. And they didn't say that. They said, never happened.
So yeah, they are. What they're saying is that, like, what looks to be true, which is that basically this was a game of energy market brinkmanship and that the U.S. blinked.
Yes. Yes. And what it looks like to me. With
also, Iran over the weekend threatened to mine the Strait of Hormuz. John, you've spent a lot of time in the Gulf states. I guess I was really surprised to read. I mean, obviously, I knew that they're reliant on desalination plants. I mean, when you fly in,
you can
see why everything's super dry. There ain't nothing there. You know, every tree that's literally there is irrigated. But the thing is, what shocked me is that all of these countries, including the UAE, they have about 5 days worth of water. And then poof.
That's it. And, you know, the complaint 35 years ago was, we can desalinate seawater to drink it. Mm-hmm. We can import all the chemicals we need, you know, to do that. But if something happens, like there's not energy, for example, electricity to power the desalination plants, we're screwed because we only have 5 days worth of water. And you see water tanks all over the Gulf, all over the place. Well, if the Iranians hit the desalination plants or hit the water tanks, everybody's screwed. There just isn't enough water to go around. And so without water, no life.
So, John, what I'm assuming is happening, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm assuming happening at the White House is that panicked world leaders, particularly in shooting range of Iran, are calling the White House and saying, please, when is this going to end? Please bring this in for a soft landing. We don't want to lose our desalination plants. We don't want to lose our power plants because Iran threatened to hit those too. We can't afford to. We're getting destroyed by, you know, I think also, you know, we think that they want higher oil prices, but they don't really want oil prices this much higher this quickly because it's going to the entire global economy to seize up and then the end will fall off a cliff.
That's exactly
that's what
right.
happened that after 1973, 74. You and I are old exactly enough to remember right. that.
Yeah. Nobody wants shocks. Everybody wants stability because stability is to everyone's benefit. Shocks just change everything too quickly. See, this is the thing too about the Gulf countries, all the Gulf countries, on the Arab side, is they're all very, very conservative when it comes to economics. They don't want shocks. They want everything to be nice and steady, nice and even. First of all, it's impossible to budget that way if there are shocks. Right. Prices are up here, everybody feels rich, then the prices collapse and people go hungry. You can't run a country like that. So right, they don't
you have
like
to know how to tax and all that too.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also we're talking about some of the least diversified economies in the world.
That's right.
It's not like, that's well, oil's not doing well, but you know, hey, we're selling potatoes.
Well, Kuwait is oil. Saudi Arabia is oil. Abu Dhabi's oil. Bahrain is banking. Dubai is banking. Mm-hmm. Oman is oil. It's pretty much all oil or it's banking tied to oil.
Yeah.
And then if you've got a hot war going on right there in your front yard, it's just not good for anybody.
The thing about banking is banking can move. Banking is mobile. I mean, banking
and
is
they,
virtual.
And they have moved. And that's what the danger is, Ted, because the banking center of the Middle East used to be Beirut until 1976. And then they all moved to Bahrain. And then the uprising began in Bahrain. And then they moved to Dubai. Mm-hmm. And they've just been in Dubai ever since. Well, if Dubai is going to be the recipient of Iranian rockets every 4 hours, how long are they going to stay in Dubai?
The head of the International Energy Agency, John, Fatih Birol, says that already where we are now as we enter the fourth week of this war, the impact on oil, this we have two, that this oil shock is already worse than the two oil shocks of the 1970s combined. And it's already worse on natural gas than the effect of the Russia-Ukraine war and the destruction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That's massive. I mean, look, you and I are both in our early 60s. I remember gas rationing.
Depended on what the last number or letter of your license plate was. That was the day that you could get gas. My dad was out there with a screwdriver switching the plates all the time. It was bad.
Yeah, my mom was like forward looking, unlike all of our neighbors who were driving giant tuna boats, like you know, LTDs and Cadillac Sevilles. They were all, you know, my mom had a Le Car, a Renault, so she was giving away her ration coupons to our neighbors, and they were like, "Oh my God, Yvonne, thank you so much."
My parents
were like
had
crying.
We had a station wagon, a Ford LTD, the big one. But then my parents bought in 1973 because of the oil shock. My parents bought a Gremlin, an AMC Gremlin, that got like you know 50 miles to the gallon at the time.
Now the thing is, John, correct me if my memory is faulty, but the way I remember it, the United States economy did not even begin to recover from the OPEC crises and the oil shocks of the early to mid 70s until the mid 80s. It was like 10 years.
That's true. The beginnings of the recovery were 1982. After the 82, well, that's not true. It's 83.
Mm-hmm. There was a recession.
That's when
we finally
started to, we came out of the recession. We started to grow the economy again. Today I was reading Barron's. I've been traveling all week. I just got home last night. There was a copy of Barron's waiting for me. And Barron says, we're screwed. We're in a recession, even if we don't admit it yet.
Agreed.
And not only has this four-week-long war wiped out the last year's worth of profits, but we're going to keep losing for the rest of the year because we're now in a recession. And this is an economic slowdown of choice. We decided to kill the economy. We decided to spike oil prices. And for what?
Media.
Because Benjamin Netanyahu told us to.
Want to support the show with style? Go to deprogram.live and check out our merch. That's deprogram.live or check out the description below. Thanks for watching. The five-day extension, that's Trump blinking, isn't it? Isn't that a taco moment?
Without any question. You know, it's funny too, when he made the threat, my first thought, like yours, was that's a war crime. Yep. And we're like the only country in the world that telegraphs our war crimes. Like, right. Listen up, everybody. We're going to commit a war crime in 48 hours unless you do what we say. And then the 48 hours comes, and then he's like, okay, listen now. We're gonna seriously do this war crime. We're gonna give you 5 more days, and then war crime central. And then the stock market's like, yay, we're not doing a war crime for 5 more days.
Although I don't
we're
think
the only stock country market, in the world that does this.
Stock market doesn't care about the war crimes, I think.
No, it doesn't.
They care about the crime to their bottom line. All right, so John, the week's going to go by. You and I are going to be here all week covering this. But what's going to happen Friday? Are there even indirect negotiations? Iran says no. I'm inclined to believe them, but there would need to be for anything to change. I mean, what Iran? I feel like, you know, Trump's not good at negotiating, and I think what Iran needs, Trump can't give, especially not he can't get a sign off from Bibi on it, right? I mean, what Iran needs is a guarantee that they're not going to be attacked anymore. And
yes.
They also want some reparations and maybe an apology.
Let me ask you a question, Ted. Where do you think the Russians and the Chinese are in all this? Mm. They've been virtually silent, aside from, you know, a couple of S-400s and, you know, radar systems. What are the Russians and the Chinese doing for Iran? Almost nothing, it seems.
Well, I think it's tempting to sort of say that they're just sitting back and eating popcorn and laughing, but I think it's more complicated than that. I think for the Russians, they're a little bit uncomfortable because they haven't been able to come to the aid of their ally. Right now, they've got their ally Cuba kind of, you know, spinning in the wind. Iran also, you know, there's not a lot they can do to help very much. And it's kind of like, well, we hope it goes well. Keep us posted. And that's not like a good look for, you know, sort of a semi superpower. But on the other hand, you know, their ally is winning. So yeah. I think they're just sitting out and hoping.
See, and this is the difference between the United States and a lot of other countries is we have a vastly different definition of winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I agree with you. I think the Iranians are winning, and we can define winning here as not losing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like there's not going to be General Douglas MacArthur sitting at some conference room table across from some Iranian general as they sign their, you know, intent to surrender. Those days are gone. That'll never happen again. Winning is just surviving.
Hamas won.
Hamas won. Exactly.
The people of Gaza did not win, but
that's right.
Hamas won.
That's right.
So, and as for China, I mean, my take there is that, you know, they don't like this. I think the Chinese, you know, we think of them as just wanting to compete with us, and we see the world as a zero-sum game. I don't think the Chinese see it that way at all. They want to do business. And all of this instability is bad for business, including for them. I think they just sort of think that we're crazy and they want to stay out of our way. You know, I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're offering their services as an intermediary.
Yes.
I don't think the U.S. would take them up on it, but they probably should take them up on it.
They probably should. Although, you know what? We've had other intermediaries. We've had the Omanis. We've had the Algerians. We've had the Italians, even the Swiss. And we just end up lying to everybody. You know, we pretend to engage in these negotiations. We come out and we say how great the negotiations were. And then we start bombing 2 days later. So why would anybody take us seriously? I wouldn't.
No, we can't be trusted at all.